Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
G, 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 take me away. G, 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 take me today.
Welcome to episode 29. This is with my friend Siwat Thitiwatana. I know Siwat from my music days. He had a band called Siwat that I liked very much. And now he owns a delicious Thai food restaurant in Astoria, Queens called Mamu Thai Noodle. It's so good. He also is running a food truck, not coincidentally also called Mamu Thai Noodle Truck. So, you could check all that out. But you can't stream his noodles like you can his music. You gotta go to the restaurant or the food truck. Okay, I'm gonna keep this intro short because I am currently on the road recording this a week before it drops. I sure hope I'm having a good time right now. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. It's really fun. We hear about Thailand a bit, and we hear about his unique experiences. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with me, Matt Kaplan, and Siwat Thitiwatana.
So is it just like free flow? Do you guys have some questions?
I'm going to have questions.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about... I really want to talk about your upbringing in Thailand, but I also want... Let's start now and work ourselves backwards, okay?
Okay.
Let's start at the now.
At the now.
But not quite the now, because that's right now here facing each other.
Yeah.
Let's talk
now
about...
in life.
Yeah, the general now. Because you own a restaurant and a food truck.
Yes.
And this is interesting, I think, I think it may be interesting to a lot of people because a lot of people think about it or it's part of their lives.
Right.
What made you decide to own and operate a food truck, and how hard is this business?
That's a good question. It's the hardest thing I've ever done.
It's the hardest thing you've ever done as far as like making a profit or just the work?
Both. Physically demanding, psychologically demanding, I mean, yeah, and monetarily too. It's just so much hard work. Goes into, I think, any small business, but certainly food business. Yeah.
Why? Because everything goes bad eventually? It doesn't stay long?
Well, I mean, if you have a food truck, logistically, it's a nightmare. I mean, where are you going to store all that food overnight?
Right.
Where are you going to prep all that food? I mean, the truck can, sure, it has a kitchen and some counter space, but... I mean, if you're going to sell food in volume and try to actually make a profit, where are you going to prep all that food?
Yeah, it's
and
not
store
really.
Store it. And where are you going to park it? Where are you going to clean it?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to fill the water? Where are you going to get propane? Where are you going to, you know.
A lot of logistics.
A lot of logistics.
How do food trucks do that? Because it seems like they're always in the same spot.
Well, I mean, New York City, you have a permit, and we can get into that. That's that's kind of...
You have a permit for a specific spot?
No, you have a permit citywide, usually, that runs 2 years at a time. And it kind of says that you can park anywhere in the city except for metered spots.
Mm-hmm.
Even commercially zoned metered spots, you are not allowed to park and sell from.
What about fire hydrant areas?
Well, it's still a fire hydrant, so you can't park there.
Okay.
So we have these permits that allow us to park in the city, but not at non-metered spots. But metered spots in high traffic areas are about 90% of the city. So technically, yeah. I have a permit on my truck to sell food, but I have nowhere to park. Because everywhere I park, I'm liable to get a ticket or be kicked out or be towed away.
Even though you're inside the truck because you're standing.
Yes, we're inside the truck and we could get a ticket at any time.
Uh-huh.
For any of those reasons, either selling vending merchandise from a metered spot, that's a ticket, or not paying the meter.
Right.
You know, if we're too close to a hydrant, just like anybody else.
So here in New York City, there seems to be the same trucks in the same spots all the time.
Right, because a lot of trucks will just, you know, find a spot and do well there and just keep going there or cultivating that spot. And
how do they keep it? How do they get it? Why is no one parked there every day?
It's pretty cutthroat. Most trucks will have a spotter car. Spend all night there.
Oh, really? Like, is that how they do it?
Yeah.
A spotter car.
Right. Like they'll have a van that parks there overnight and saves them the spot.
I didn't know that.
Or they get there, you know, in the summer on 47th and Park, you know, most days there's at least 8 to 10 trucks on that one block. And almost all those trucks before 5 a.m., there's already 8 trucks waiting just to open at 11 just for the spot. So they're there like, you know, crack of dawn. Before the crack of dawn, way before.
So that's part of the hustle, having the spotter car.
Exactly. That's also part of the hustle. So if you're an owner of a food truck, are you going to spend the time waiting in that car? Or are you going to hire someone? How much are you going to pay that guy hours and hours just to sit in the car or a truck waiting to open at 11?
And then there's food carts that are able to go on the sidewalk. So if you don't have wheels, you can put your food cart on the sidewalk? Is that
right? Food carts are parked on sidewalks, yeah.
What percentage of your time is spent in the truck?
Now?
Yeah.
Well, this is our third year of operation. I'm really not on the truck at all anymore. I'm only there if it's emergency or like someone's called out and I can't find a chef, so I have to go and cook on the truck. But I'm really not on the truck on a daily basis at all.
Is that because you've branched out to a restaurant and you're there?
Right. We now have a restaurant in Astoria.
Will you tell us the name of the restaurant and the truck?
Sure. Mamu Thai Noodle is the name of the truck and the restaurant.
So you called them both Mamu Thai because it's the same food.
It is. Well, the truck is a noodle truck and we only sell the noodle dishes off the truck. At the restaurant, it's a bigger menu.
Same noodle dishes.
Same noodle dishes and a few other dishes as well, like mm-hmm. curries and barbecue and stuff like that.
Which is harder, the truck or the restaurant? I think the restaurant would be harder.
Yes, in a way, the restaurant is harder.
Even though it's stationary, you already got your spot.
Right, we have our spot, but then again, you have to grow that spot unless you're like on a high foot traffic area, in which case we are not.
Mm-hmm.
We've been open now for a year and a half and it's been a struggle, which is different than the truck. When I first opened the truck, it seemed, you know, we were the first and still the only noodle truck on the streets. So
on the scene.
Right. We're the only Thai noodle truck in the city. And when we first opened, it just seemed to take off. Like, it just seemed like the market wanted it. People wanted this. And wherever we went, we did pretty well.
And the truck, I mean, I've seen it. It's like really a spectacle for the eyes. It's painted beautifully.
Thanks. Yeah, that's my friend Carl came up with the logo. And yeah, he did a great job. It's definitely a part of, you know, you have to think about how you're going to attract people to your truck, you know?
Right.
It's something you definitely have to think about.
So do you have certain spots where the Mamu Thai truck always goes?
Yes. Well, every Friday we're in Dumbo on Jay and Water Street.
Do you always get that spot?
Well, that's a situation where we pay the owner of that. It's like it's basically a parking lot.
Oh, okay.
And we pay them to be there for the day.
In noodles?
No. They want cold hard cash.
Yeah, I bet. So when you say we, you mean your business partners or your wife? Who's the we?
Well, at first in the beginning when we first started, we was me and my sister, who helped out a lot getting the truck off the ground and working, but as well at the restaurant. But now she's branched off to do other things, and now
you fired your sister?
No, more or less. No, we weren't making enough money. First of all, like, she came from the corporate world of cosmetics, and
right,
and was making pretty good money doing that.
She's
used to real money, and you know, starting a restaurant or working in the food business. Certainly in the beginning, you're not making any real money.
Yeah, they say restaurants are one of the hardest businesses to do. They have such a high failure rate, right?
Right, they do. I mean, they say, you know, fashion and food and music too, right? I mean, music is so...
It's so low, they probably don't even count it.
Right, well, yeah. I mean, that's how I met you, through music.
Yeah.
And I basically went from one kind of, you know... not career, because I was doing other things as well, but
yeah,
you know, one world where it's hard to make money to another world where it's still hard to make money.
Yeah, I know we talked about this, but like, being a musician is such great training for everything else, because you set yourself up for so much effort and so little success.
Right,
that everything else after pursuing music is easier.
right in a sense, yes. I mean, I'm definitely better at making money with food than I was with music.
Easier to do that. People ain't going to stream no noodles.
Right. You went from zero to some.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Zero, yeah, to a little amount.
Yeah.
Or negative. Well, that depends how you look at it, I guess. I don't know.
No matter what you do, it's great to see a return on your energy.
Yes, it is, but you don't always, you know. I mean, I think opening a business, you have to like really try to avoid making expensive mistakes, because they can kill you, and they will kill you. And early on, you have to recognize like what it's a risk in itself to start any business, but like, what other risks are you going to take after you've started?
Right, like expanding.
You know, I often ask myself, do we expand too soon? Because it's been a real struggle ever since we've opened. Just because we're not on like a main street, kind of, we're kind of off, you know, more further away than you know, a main street like Broadway or Steinway in Astoria. Right. We're on 36th Avenue and 36th Street, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know, what was I saying?
Well, it's hard to find, restaurants are very hard, but do you think that maybe expanding, you had the truck first, which was very successful, and then you decided, how come you decided to do a restaurant instead of another truck? I imagine the restaurant serves the truck in a way.
It does. It definitely acts as our headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
So at the restaurant, you know, before the restaurant, I used to rent a commercial kitchen in East Williamsburg.
Right. So that cuts off that expense.
Right. And I wanted to, and I realized after the first year of the truck, how hard it was to run a truck during the winter.
All right.
And we were just not open every day. And I felt like, wow, I really need to have a space where I can be open all year, you know?
Right.
Not just be so seasonal. And so that played a part in it as well.
Why is it hard to have the truck during the winter? Because
the weather. I mean, you know, New York City.
Less customers?
Less customers. I mean, I would say our business goes down 30 to 40% during the winter.
Because people don't want to wait for their food.
Exactly. Outside. They don't want to stand outside. They don't want to be outside. You know, we've been fortunate this winter to have a pretty mild one. But the past 2 or 3 years, it's been pretty rough. The winter.
How hard would it be to put a tarp out, like a heated area in front of the truck where people can stand?
I mean, then you'd have to, you know, power it somehow.
Right.
How are you going to power that? You know, we run off a generator, like all the electric equipment in the truck, like the fridge and the hood and all those things run off our generator. But do you have enough electricity to heat something.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think in the Tacos Del Bronco truck near me in Sunset Park, they have, during the colder weather, they have like one of those kind of like vinyl little encasings, right, with a like a floor heater in there.
Right.
I mean, it's good when you're ordering your food, you can't hang out, right, there and eat, but it probably helps a little bit.
It does. And also, I mean, that's something you can you can get away with, mm-hmm, in Brooklyn, Sunset Park, or in some parts of Queens. You can set up like basically a tent.
Right.
But, you know, you're not going to get away with that in Midtown Manhattan. They will chase you off the street.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So with Thai food, which is, uh-huh, what you serve,
yes,
I guess there's Thai food that's more authentic and one that is more catered to Americans or New Yorkers. Like, for example, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, like there are places in certain parts of Queens that like I've been to, uh-huh, and it's so spicy, like my mouth is burning from eating a salad.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I don't like to be too, you know, judgmental about who's authentic and who's not. I think, you know, you can add spice to anything and just add a lot of it and call it authentic. You know, does being more spicy make it authentic? I don't really know. I think it's just a matter of taste, you, mm-hmm, know? Yeah.
I guess,
I like that answer.
I'm not trying to trap you into anything or insult, you know, white people or anything, but is your dishes, are they, you know, something from your family, your childhood?
Well, the whole idea of the truck, before I started it, I was at a noodle shop in Bangkok with my uncle, and we were eating these noodles, and I think we had about 7 bowls each, literally uh-huh, 7 bowls. And it was just so good. And I remember at that moment thinking, you know, why can't we get noodles like this in New York?
Do you know why? Did you figure out why?
Did I figure out why? No, I never really did. I just knew that it wasn't really that available.
Yeah.
And so I said, why not try it?
Well, it's hard
out
to know.
Of a truck.
Right. It's hard to know. Like, you know, they say New York pizza, New York bagels, and people guess that it's the water that makes it unique to here.
Right.
But yeah, there's some ingredients that only grow locally.
Yeah. And I think what struck me about how good those noodles were in Thailand that I was eating was just the freshness. It's just so super fresh, and fresh rice noodles, you can really tell the difference.
Yeah.
And that's what we do, you know, every morning, literally. I have someone pick up fresh rice noodles at, mm-hmm, this noodle factory in Elmhurst.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we hand cut every morning, and we serve at the restaurant and at the truck.
The noodles are made fresh every day?
The noodles are made fresh every day.
Wow, yeah. Neat. How do you know, like, how do you test your recipes? How did you get them to a place where you're happy with?
Well, a lot of the noodle recipes are from my uncle's noodle shop. He had his noodle shop in Bangkok.
Oh, okay.
Or he had one.
Uh-huh.
He passed away, but
oh, yeah, I'm sorry
he
to
had
hear that.
One. And so he was...
You killed him.
I know. Yeah. Actually, he was here when I first, you know, opened the truck, and he was, for a month, we were cooking his recipes.
Oh, cool.
And just testing it out and testing the differences between the sauces here and the sauces that we could get from Thailand, and, mm-hmm, and trying to match, you know, what we could. So, you know, he spent a while here helping me do that with his recipes, and we've come up with some of our own recipes as well.
And yeah. do you do like a focus group kind of thing, or do you...
Yeah, well, I mean, for over a year, my neighbors were eating like free Thai noodles like every week.
Right.
So yeah, a lot of my neighbors were recipes of that.
So you're just getting an idea of what they like, or just...
Yeah, just giving them, you know, at first it was like, oh, awesome, you give me all these noodles. And then after a while, they were like more objective, like, okay, I can tell the difference between this and this.
Right.
And they would be able to give me more constructive criticism rather than being like, oh, this is great.
Yeah. Whenever I've worked, I used to work in restaurants, and I always, like, working around a certain food all day or all night, I never wanted to eat that food at the end.
Right. It's true. You kind of forget to eat if you're cooking all day.
Yeah.
You're kind of tasting things, and you forget to actually sit down and have an actual meal. And
it's such a high-stress, fast-paced environment.
It definitely is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, with that, employees, traditionally... restaurant employees aren't necessarily the most responsible people. Are you hiring people that you try to hire people you know, or just random people? Or
that's one of the hardest things, is dealing with employees.
Uh-huh.
And people's personalities, and nobody really tells you about how difficult that can be, you know, before you open a business. No one really, you know, you
well, because you're the boss now.
Right. And you have to understand how to become a boss. And it took me a while. I'm still learning every day, like, yeah, how to become a real boss and not just, you know, someone that tells people what to do, or someone that's too nice, you know, or too much of a prick or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line. And it's
because you want to motivate them to do a good job without, right, bossing them.
Right. And I think that, having a good system for people to follow is super important. Like, most people, you would think that if you just leave people alone, and in the beginning I thought, you know, all right, let me hire people who have experience in, uh-huh, restaurants and food trucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the beginning, the very beginning, I was hiring people who had more food truck experience than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just leave them to it. And then I realized, no, this is a recipe for disaster. Just, you know, people just did whatever they wanted, and that was not good.
Right.
You know, because most people's ideas or motivations aren't the same as any owner's, you know.
You want to get a somewhat of a system?
I think it's hugely important if you start a business to have a system before you even start.
Mm-hmm.
Before you even go into business, you got to know who's going to do this, who's going to do that, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do.
Right.
And daily operations, there should be a systematic approach to daily operations.
That's how you get something running really well.
Right.
Yeah, my friend worked for Starbucks for maybe a week or 10 uh-huh. days, and he was telling me that you really just have no independent brain whatsoever when you work for a Starbucks.
Right.
I mean, they treat their employees okay.
Right.
But you're told exactly what to say, and they'll even send in spies to make sure you're doing exactly the same thing, really, that you're supposed to.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, I think that if you just leave people up to their own
They go rogue.
I mean, there are very few people who will, like, have great imaginations and bring ambitious ideas to the table, but most people are just there to get paid and go home.
Right. Well, that's interesting that you'd say that. I mean, do you welcome that? Or, because, like, if you go to any Starbucks, they'll never, no matter how many times you say, can I have a small or a medium coffee, they'll never say, oh, medium coffee. Always repeat grande or whatever.
Right. I do welcome creative people and ideas, because I think that's, I coming from music,
mm-hmm,
you know, I like people bringing ideas, things, mm-hmm, that I haven't thought of, because I also feel like as an owner, I'm too inside my head.
Right.
And I have so many things that I'm worrying about at all times, you know, not just the quality of the food, but, you know, the next event with the truck or the next catering, because we've expanded our catering pretty widely as well.
Right, like having a band, you get the input, and your song becomes a thing perhaps greater than you had ever expected.
Right, exactly.
When you get this good collaboration.
Right, and then that's, you know, I've just recently hired a manager because there was just too much work for me.
Are you a control freak? Are you able to let the manager just manage?
He accuses me of being a control freak. Yes, uh-huh. Yes, he does.
Well, it is tricky because you hire a manager, but you can't just close your eyes and let them do their job. You got to kind of watch
right.
over.
I mean, right, because this is not like, it's not like I have a bunch of investors that put money in. Like, this is, you know, mostly my money,
right?
My family's money. So this is a big, you know, if this fails, it's going to be hard.
Well, this is the first time you're doing something like this.
Right.
So,
and we're still alive 3 years later. So
exactly.
Thankfully, yes.
And it only gets easier. The first time's always the hardest.
You know, I don't know if it's easier. I think you just become more numb.
Well, maybe you make better decisions.
Right. I hope that I'm making better decisions. Right. I become more, you know, when problems used to occur, it used to affect me so much, and then, you know, affect my mood. But now it's like, okay, problem happened. What can we do to solve it? Is there anything we can do?
Right.
If there's not, okay, what can we learn from it?
Yeah, that makes
sense.
Rather
than like being like, oh, my day is ruined, or oh, you know. If the truck breaks down now, I mean, it costs a lot of money to take the truck out. You know, employees have to be paid.
Right.
Food is wasted or not. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it used to just, if the truck broke down, it still bums me out greatly, but it used to, like, you know, ruin my day. And I would be, like, yeah, not able to think, you know, clearly the rest of the day because of it.
That gets easier, yeah.
Do you feel that, like, dealing with these things in business, these obstacles, are you able to translate them into your everyday life of, you know, your marriage, raising a child? Do you feel like, okay, I've dealt with a staff of crazy waiters and waitresses, raising a kid is easy.
He beats his wife and child.
No, my wife left me, and now
she left the child too, just because she hates me.
It's hard to separate personal life and business life. You know, I live 4 doors down from the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of it was definitely on purpose. I wanted to live close.
Right.
Before we opened the restaurant, my wife was pregnant, and I knew, and we were living in Brooklyn at the time, and we were building the restaurant in Astoria, and just driving back and forth from the, you know, building the restaurant to Brooklyn, and I knew that if we had a baby, you know, it just takes too long.
Be a lot, yeah.
So we moved right next to the restaurant, and it makes it, I think being closer helps, but it also makes it harder to separate personal life and mm-hmm. business life, because I'm always kind of there.
It's like when you take a walk with your wife and child, you just walk the other way, right? Away from the restaurant.
Right, away from the restaurant. But I don't know how to answer that question, because it's hard for me to separate right okay. now, at least. At this time, you know, last year, 2015,
mm-hmm.
we moved to Queens.
Yeah.
We had a baby and we opened a restaurant.
Yeah.
So we did all those three things. Well, you know, we moved in April, we opened the restaurant in May, and we had a baby in June.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And you know,
I got a haircut and I bought a new pair of jeans.
Right. And that used to be my life too. And then I wish, you know, that those are the halcyon days of just hanging out. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
That's fun. I miss that immensely.
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing. If you start a business, you have to be willing to really go for it. And, you know, Gary, you and I haven't seen each other very often since I've opened.
You ditched our friendship for a wife and kid and a business. Or you just hate my new pair of jeans. I don't know.
It was your haircut.
No, I didn't think of the haircut.
Doing just any one of those three things, opening a restaurant, having a kid, or moving to Queens,
right.
Most people would lose about 60% of their friends.
I
did all three within 3 months, and you know, haven't seen any friends since.
Hearing you say this kind of reminds me of how I've evolved with freelancing, because I've been freelancing for many years now.
Uh-huh.
But at first, I used to panic every month that I wouldn't be able to make bills. Or if I had a really good month, I'd spend that money and be like, woo! And then the next month, I'd panic.
Uh-huh.
So now I budget every 3 months. So okay. If I have a good month, I put it away.
Right.
And then every 3 months, I'll kind of evaluate my expenses to see what I can afford to do or not do.
Right.
Yeah.
And that just comes with experience. And I think is very similar to business, you know, and I'm trying to get used to that as well, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, the restaurant or the food business is definitely cyclical, and it definitely goes in waves. And right now is kind of the, you know, quote unquote slow time, you know, whether you're doing a food truck or doing a restaurant, you know, the winter is just generally.
People just go out less?
People go out less, and people tend to cook more at home and you know,
mm-hmm.
not spend money.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you doing more deliveries though?
A little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely more than this time last year.
Yeah.
So that's helpful.
And for catering, is that actually driving the food truck right to a party?
That's just one of the aspects of catering. Okay. We also do office catering, where I work with catering agencies and they get us, you know, jobs all over the city with, you know, bunch of different companies like Spotify or Dropbox, and we'll feed 100 people at this office and, you know, 50 people at another office. So
you just put their meal in the cloud and they download it.
Right. Well, yeah, we feed a lot of those offices, you know, now. Yeah, that's also another thing. Like catering, I never even thought about catering before we opened the truck. And when we opened the restaurant, I was like, oh, now we can grow the catering. And it's really grown into its own thing. So this is really grateful.
You have like three separate businesses at least. You have the food truck, you have the restaurant, and you have the catering.
Right. So now it's three streams of revenue now.
Right.
And right now the catering is kind of carrying the weight of, you know,
mm-hmm.
the slowness of the food truck and the slowness of the restaurant. So yeah, catering is definitely carrying us right now.
And
the goal is, you know, when I opened, I said, okay, the goal is to have the truck running, you know, rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
The restaurant open and, you're doing well,
yeah,
and catering goes out, you know, and a lot of times we will have that, you know, two teams going out to deliver at two different offices in the city. The truck is selling on in the city somewhere, and the restaurant is open.
Right. Are you thinking about moving the restaurant to a more popular area if you can?
I don't know. Well, I don't have the money to do that. But the neighborhood that I'm in Astoria, it's like kind of the border of Astoria, Long Island City. Even in the year that I've been there, it's totally changing. And I can see the change. Like I kind of feel like we've been part of that change.
Yeah, you're the pioneers?
I wouldn't say pioneers, but yeah, we were definitely early.
Yeah.
Early
so
adopters.
So walking traffic is developing slowly?
It's developing slowly. Across the street, this guy opened up the ukulele hut.
Uh-huh.
And it's New York City's only ukulele shop. Like only they only sell ukuleles.
Wow.
Yeah. We work.
Hey, if he can stay a business, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty ballsy to open up only ukuleles.
Very.
Very nice guy, Ken.
20 years ago, probably someone thought it'd be silly to open up a Thai restaurant.
Yeah, probably.
Is that kind of a new thing, the introduction of Thai food?
I don't think, not anymore, certainly not in New York.
Yeah.
Thai food has been pretty well known and adopted by New Yorkers for at least 30 years now, I think.
I would see it becoming more and more popular because it doesn't deal with a lot of wheat. It deals with a lot of rice instead.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot of gluten-free dishes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, now Thai food is so like kind of normal that now you have movements of like, all right, it's not just a Thai restaurant, it's a Northern Thai restaurant.
Right.
So like they have Northern Thai dishes and Southern Thai dishes, and you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Like,
it's getting more nuanced.
Right. It's getting more nuanced. And now you have restaurants that specialize in certain regions food, you know?
Did you feel like when you started the food truck that went well immediately? Were you worried that you're expanding too fast by doing the restaurant? You ever think of just doing another truck?
Yeah, I mean, we may be doing another food cart, actually. We may be doing a food cart sometime this year.
Cool.
I don't know if I could do another food truck, only because in New York City it's so hard to have a truck and run a truck.
There's a lot of food, more food trucks than ever, right?
There's a lot of food. It's not so much the competition that worries me. It's all the regulations and all the fines that we get and tickets. And, you know, having two food trucks means you got to find two parking spots every day.
Right.
You know, you got to have two teams every day. With a cart, it's actually a little bit easier. You park it on the sidewalk, and then when you're done, you put it back onto the lift and you drive it away.
Right. Much easier, I would imagine.
But I don't know about opening another restaurant in the city, but I actually wanted to open a restaurant in Westchester where I grew up. So I that's my goal, is actually to move out of the city.
Well, it gets easier once if you call it Mamu Thai, you basically just copy what you did somewhere else, right?
Right. I mean, my goal is to get out of the city, and I don't want to live in the city forever.
You don't.
It's just getting too hard.
I hear raising a kid in the city is so crazy expensive.
I think, definitely. Raising a kid anywhere, but certainly in New York City.
In the United States.
Yeah. Raising a kid on Earth is pretty expensive.
Now, you grew up in Thailand, right?
My family's from Thailand. I was born here.
You're born
but
here.
But I spent probably every summer or every other summer in Thailand.
Mm-hmm. And I was at your wedding.
Yes.
And it was such a cool, beautiful ceremony. It was a Buddhist ceremony, right?
Yes.
What branch of Buddhism is it?
It's a Theravada Buddhism.
Theravada?
Yeah, which is probably the most popular form of Buddhism in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's rooted in Thailand?
It's rooted in Thailand. It's kind of the old interpretation of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you grow up with that?
Yes, I did grow up with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you telling me once that your parents made you beg.
Huh?
Your parents made you beg. Is begging the word?
Beg?
Or asking for change as a form of way of teaching humility?
I don't remember. Was that me? They didn't ask me to beg or anything. I think, I grew up going to Sunday school at Buddhist temples.
Right.
Well, there was one Buddhist temple in Mount Vernon in Westchester that I used to attend every Sunday. And, you know, part of Buddhist culture is when a male turns 18 or older, he can go and ordain as a monk to learn more about Buddhism. And that's something I did. And I went back to Thailand and ordained as a monk and lived in a monastery for a short time.
How long?
It was about 6 weeks.
6 weeks in one shot.
Yeah.
So what does that entail? I mean, I know this is so different than running a restaurant in Astoria, but I'm kind of fascinated. This is like totally opposite world.
This is another life.
Yeah.
What does that entail? Well,
first of all, monks are, they give up all sex and, right? They don't have any, they don't really even take in much stimulation at all.
Right. You give up
all worldly
everything.
Stuff.
All worldly possessions and you shave your head and you shave your eyebrows and.
Eyebrows and, too, huh?
Yeah, you shave your eyebrows. No facial hair. What I did was I studied with a monk. You know, all the chants were in Sanskrit, which is, you know, a dead language now. Nobody speaks it, but all the chants are in Sanskrit.
So kind of like English.
Right. Kind of like English. I had to learn it phonetically. To learn all the chants and know the meanings.
You learned the meanings?
I learned a lot of the meanings, yes.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking, this was 2002.
See, I was bar mitzvahed and they do the same thing to us, but we don't know what we're saying.
You know,
you know, everyone learns all this Hebrew stuff. You have to learn to read all this Hebrew and then you repeat it at your bar mitzvah, but I don't know any Jews that know what they're saying.
That they don't know the meaning, you mean?
They don't know what they're saying. They have no idea. And they just do it because it's tradition. You just do it.
Right.
And of course, me being me and rebellious, even at that age, I was like, I want to know what I'm saying. And they'd always, just learn it. I'm like, well, if you're not going to tell me what I'm saying, I kind of got the feeling the rabbi didn't even know. So literally, he wrote it out phonetically. He was so frustrated with me that he wrote it out phonetically. And I just read this whole Hebrew stuff phonetically. And I still don't know what I was saying.
I'm sure you could have easily found it. I mean, very often, when you're learning, it'll have one page in Hebrew and then the opposite side in English translation.
But not mine.
No.
It's in Hebrew, though, right?
It's all in
people
Hebrew.
People still speak Hebrew, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess they do. Yeah.
So I guess Israeli kids know what they're saying, then.
Yes, they probably do. But you Jews on Long Island, you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Right.
It is just tradition that it's following. I mean, I did it to make my mom happy. So.
Right.
So when you were going through this training, was there a part of you at the time that was considering a religious life? Or is it more of just a traditional thing that you wanted to do for yourself and your family?
Right. It was more of that traditional thing. I mean, it's still to this day one of the best things I have ever done. It helped me really focus on life and you know, kind of take away a lot of distractions that were in my head, certainly at that time in my life.
What does your average day look like in the Buddhist temple?
In the Buddhist temple?
When you were doing that?
When I was there, you wake up before the sun comes up around 4 a.m. And then you gather with the other monks and you chant in the morning, also before the sun comes up. And then probably around 7 a.m., you then 6, 7 a.m., you go and you walk, you carry your alms bowl and you walk through the neighborhood barefoot.
What's an alms?
Alms, yeah.
Alms.
Like
what's
giving alms.
Bowl? Giving alms.
So, like, you know, in
it's hard to say, alms.
In Thai Buddhism, the monks walk around the neighborhood with a bowl, alms bowl, and people would come in front of their houses and give food to the monks because the monks are not allowed to prepare food and they're not allowed to cook food.
Okay.
So, and they can only eat once a day. And if nobody came out to give you food, then you wouldn't eat for the day.
Wow.
So it was kind of like a cyclical thing where the people would come knowing that the monks only eat once a day and give food in their alms bowl.
Right.
And that would bring karma, good karma to them for doing that.
Uh-huh.
So we can't possibly live in a world where everybody's a monk. Otherwise, we'd all starve.
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, you'd have to rely on the kindness of other people.
Not if everyone was a monk.
Yeah, right. If 100% of the people were monks, right.
Plus, if everyone was a monk, everything would be all peaceful and there would be nothing to chant or meditate about. We'd just be there, right?
Right, I guess.
So do you still, are you still practicing this meditation?
I do. I still meditate, not nearly as much as I used to. Now I only seem to meditate when I kind of feel extra stressed out. But there was a time in my life where I was meditating every day, you know, multiple times a day.
I mean, 6 weeks, that's a long time. Is it silence?
No, not there in silence. I didn't take a vow of silence. I was there really to learn from other monks the philosophy of Buddhism. And it taught me a lot about just, you know, focusing. And I think, you know, a lot of people, when I came back, a lot of my friends were like, oh, so what's the meaning of life?
Right.
And what's the meaning of, you know, what does it all mean? And I didn't really have an answer at the, you know, right when I got back. But then the more I thought about it, I felt like it was just about letting go of fear. Just going for it because, you know, you're alive.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, at that time, I had no inklings of opening a business or anything like that. I never thought about that. But I think it helped me get over the fear of just going for it, you know?
Anything.
That was, I guess, the message from that time that I took.
Well, a six-week interval is a long time, right? So how many times did you do this?
Do what?
Did you do it more than once?
What's that?
Go to the Buddhist temple.
I lived at the Buddhist temple.
For 6 weeks.
For 6 weeks, yeah, in Thailand.
Right.
I ordained in Thailand, yeah.
Just the one time?
Just once, yeah.
Okay. You didn't go back again?
No. I mean, I said it back then that I would do it again.
Yeah.
And some people do it, you know, a couple times in their life.
Yeah.
When they kind of want to refocus and reestablish, you know, what it all means, I guess.
Now, you said it was the best time in your life. Is that because it just...
It
simplified things?
It really did. You know, in the beginning, it was really hard. You know, you're hungry, but you can't eat. You have all these thoughts and
cravings
and distractions. And then you realize, you know, you're there to just learn and breathe.
Right.
You know, so after a while, you just got used to not like you weren't. After a while, I wasn't hungry anymore because I knew we can only eat at a certain time and we can only eat if people brought us food.
Mm-hmm.
So why think about food?
Yeah.
You know, don't focus on your hunger.
Yeah.
Focus on something else.
Yeah.
You know, focus on the moment you're in.
Yeah. It's amazing, right? When you do that, how you realize how powerful the mind is.
Oh yeah. It's amazing. Completely amazing.
Yeah. Like in my time of meditation, I'd think that, oh, I had to move cause I had an itch or something was uncomfortable in my back. Then you just observe it and you don't itch or move and it goes away.
It's gone, right.
I think about that with itches all the time. And I'm like, oh, I'm just not going to scratch it. But then, of course, you
give in.
Yeah, because you just start obsessing about it.
Some
it is such a metaphor, itchy. The itch.
Yeah, the itch is a metaphor.
Yeah.
But I think in the Buddhism that I studied, which is Indian-based, is like you just observe it. You don't quantify it or qualify it. You just be like, oh, yeah, I see that itch. But you don't say, oh, I'm itchy. You just notice that I'm feeling an itch.
You just acknowledge it and try to move forward from it.
Yeah, and it just always went away.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how it could sit in an uncomfortable Indian position for hours.
For hours, yeah.
No back support, nothing.
Do you still meditate?
I try to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
not easy. You know, especially living in New York, there's a lot of distractions. You know, people are always calling you to do stuff or hang out here.
Not the case with me, but.
Or for me, it's not that either. Nobody calls me to do anything anymore. Now it's just, you know, oh my God, do we have enough money to pay this utility bill? Or do we have enough money to pay these employees? Or do we have enough food?
When I meditate, though, it does make my time more productive. Like, sometimes it's so hard to do it because it's like, oh, I don't have 20 minutes to give to this. But then if I do give my 20 minutes to it, the rest of my day is way more productive and powerful for whatever I'm doing.
It's crazy how if you just quiet your mind, how much better your day can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So, how old were you? Were 18 when you did this?
No, this happened in 2002. So,
oh, okay.
That was what, 14 years ago.
Let's see, math. I don't have my calculator on me.
I was like 27.
Okay, so you're old enough to know what's going on.
Yeah, I think. I hope.
Why at that age or that point in your life did you do that?
Well, growing up, I kind of, you know, in the beginning, going to Sunday school, you kind of get like, oh, God, do we have to go? But then the more I went, the more I was curious. And I knew that it was something I wanted to do. It wasn't just, it just seemed like the right time in my life at that time.
Was it always part of the path that you knew eventually you were, is it like your bar mitzvah or your journey to Mecca? Is it that kind of thing?
No, because I guess when you're a bar mitzvah, it's a certain age.
Right, yeah. Right?
I mean, this was like, after you turned 18, you could do it or you could not. Like my father didn't do this, but I kind of felt like I wanted to.
You wanted to?
Yeah. I wanted to know more about it. Yeah.
And you're glad you did it?
I'm super glad I did it.
Would you go back and do it if you could?
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
I would, if I have the opportunity. But now life just seems so busy, and it just, for me to walk away for 6 weeks or more, you know, even 2 weeks is like hard. Very hard for me to step away from.
Yeah,
my life right now. Yeah, from
the sound of it, I'm amazed that you're even here for a couple of hours doing this.
It's very difficult, but like I said, now I've hired a manager not too long ago, and you know he's got to handle this because it's just too much for me.
Right. Well, they say a good leader knows how to delegate well.
Right, and I'm trying to be a good leader.
Yeah. Is your wife Amy helping with the restaurant business at all?
No, and that was a conscious decision. In the beginning, when we opened the truck, I said, you know, at first she got a mobile vendor license so she could work on the truck with me if I needed. But then I said, very early on, I said, no, there's no way. You have to do what you do, which she's a photo editor at the magazine. And just let's keep it separate or else we're going to end up divorced.
Yeah, I think that's smart because then the walls start to close in. Last thing you want to be doing is lying in bed at night talking about the business.
Right. And that was a very conscious decision because I knew that if we worked together and live together, it would just be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whisper me sweet tax breaks.
Right.
No, it'd be hard. And that was the thing with me dating another musician. It's very hard to do that. The walls start to close in.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's tricky. Very smart of you to do that, to not make that decision.
I just knew I didn't want to end up divorced. I mean, that still might happen, but I don't want the business to be the reason.
will you also try to keep your child or any future children out of the business as well? Or is that...
No, put his ass to work.
Free labor.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, my kid, he's almost two. Yeah, I would suggest him do something totally different.
Well, people always say restaurant industry is the hardest industry.
So hard.
Is that why you'd want to keep him out of it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that's another thing. Like, there's like different levels of it now. And then I've seen it because I didn't apprentice at a famous chef's restaurant. I didn't, go to culinary school.
Right.
Like, these are literally my family's recipes and recipes I made with my family. And now we're doing it at a restaurant or at a food truck and at a restaurant. I'll never be part of like that cool chef's
culture.
Yeah. And, you know, like David Chang or any of those cool chefs.
But I feel like that's so much just marketing and branding themselves.
In a sense it is. And right. In a sense, it very much is. Because
you could be that. Be like, I'm bringing these authentic recipes from Thailand. Right.
Right. Right.
Play it all up.
Right. But I'll never belong in that club.
Uh-huh.
You know.
But I feel like with the right PR agency, you could.
Right.
Put on the Buddhist robe, right?
a Buddhist robe with an apron, like a cool denim,
yes,
like a cool hipster cook chef's apron.
Totally.
It is interesting that there's even a term celebrity chef these days.
Right.
Like that was growing up, that was never, it wasn't a cool thing to be a chef.
Right. It wasn't.
No, you were a cook.
You were a cook. I mean, unless I think that's because of the Food Network and TV, you know.
Yeah, reality TV, yeah.
Food TV, yeah, reality TV, all these shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when I'm really curious about this, I've never been to Thailand, but I've always wanted to go.
Dude, we gotta go.
Really? I would go with you.
Let's go. Let's do a group trip. I did a group trip in 2008 with like 7 other friends.
Yeah.
And it was a blast. Yeah.
That sounds really fun. I mean, once you get there, it's very inexpensive.
Right. The ticket to get there is a little expensive, but yeah, you're right. The dollar goes a long way there. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cheaper.
Yeah, I like that.
Once you get there. Sorry, what were you going to say?
But it's not particularly like, is it a deeply Buddhist culture?
Yes, so they say.
Yeah.
But you still have, you know, a lot of political turmoil going on there. And you know, the elected government has been overthrown like at least twice in the past 3 years alone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who's overthrowing them? Not the Buddhist monks.
Right, not the Buddhist monks.
They're too hungry to do that.
Right.
We want 2 meals a day.
They're fighting for their rights.
Yeah.
It's, there's two sides. One side calls themselves the red shirts. The other side calls themselves the yellow shirts.
It's like the Bloods and Crips.
Kind of, yeah. But, you know, the yellow shirts are more of like the conservatives.
Uh-huh.
And the red shirts are more liberal. And the red shirts have been in power for a good number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Much to the dismay of the yellow shirts.
What, they just want to change things about the system there?
Who's they?
The Republican?
Yes.
Yellow shirts?
Right. The yellow shirts basically had a coup. And now the yellow shirts are very aligned with the king of Thailand and the military. So now
king?
Yeah.
Is it a democracy?
It is. Well, they have a prime minister. Well, uh-huh. Now they don't. Now they have an appointed leader, junta. They have an agenda there that he's an appointed. He appointed himself the leader right now, and he says he's going to have an election, but who knows when that's
going to
happen.
He just appointed himself, and people are like, okay.
Kind of. It was fighting, a lot of fighting, but and they threw.
Donald Trump should try that. It might work. Yeah.
He kind of is.
I'm going to appoint myself president.
Right. That's what he's hoping for.
Yeah.
But Thailand politically, in the past 3 years, has pushed itself back probably 30 years.
Do you feel a connection to it?
I did when my uncle was alive. I did a lot more because he was very much into red shirt activism and always keeping me up to date.
Right.
He passed away only 5 months ago or 6 months ago.
Okay.
So I used to feel a lot more connected with that because he would just email me links and be like, oh, look at this craziness or look how stupid this is.
Right.
You know, but I haven't been back to Thailand, I guess, in 2 years, but I hope to next year.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go on a group trip if you want to come.
I do. I'm totally down. Yeah.
Anyway.
But I don't know if I could handle 6 weeks in the Buddhist temple.
We won't go for that. I don't have that much time.
Yeah. Did you, when you go back, do you always go back and visit the Buddhist temple?
The last time I did not, but I have before, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I hear things can get pretty hedonistic over there as well.
Where?
In Thailand.
In Thailand? Yeah. Sure. I mean, there's that part of Thailand as well. And there's so many things to do in Thailand. It's mm-hmm. a lot of fun and the food is really good.
Yeah. A friend of mine would go he'd go and visit every year. He's a musician, also a musician. He'd go every year and he met a Thai woman and he just ended up like buying or renting them a 2-bedroom apartment or a 1-bedroom apartment for like barely any American dollars. And really? She lives there and he has a Thai girlfriend that he just
really
goes and yeah. I don't know. I don't know how detailed I should get with their relationship, but yeah,
that's fine.
It's
yeah,
a commodity relationship.
Okay.
You know, it's a relationship built on commodity.
Sure.
A little bit.
There's things like that going on all over. I mean, it's still, as developed as it seems, Thailand is still a third world country,
It is, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Why? What makes it a third world country?
I think
whenever I hear that term, I always feel like it's like an American term that's kind of condescending.
Well, I mean, just the infrastructure is not there. It's certainly like, if your government's being overthrown, a few times in the past 3 years, like
not a good sign.
It's just not stable,
Right.
A lot of corruption, a lot of things that, there's not a lot of rules. mm-hmm. or they just make up the rules as they go, kind of thing, you know?
Right. Yeah, it always kind of blows my mind when you hear of a country just all of a sudden their money collapse.
Right.
All of a sudden their money's no good anymore.
Their money's just, yeah, it's just worthless.
Yeah. Well, that hasn't happened
there, like in Thailand, if I wanted to open a restaurant in my house, I just put a sign up and start cooking for people.
No
permits, no, right. no nothing.
No regulations.
If I wanted to start a food truck in Thailand, I would just buy a truck and start cooking food out of it and selling it, you know?
Yeah.
Here you need permits, you need licenses, mm-hmm. you need insurance, you need, you know, all these things. You mm-hmm. know? So that's just one of the differences, you know?
Is all this stuff making you, like, very politically active?
No, I don't have time to be politically active.
Yeah.
I basically have three businesses to run every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And raise a child.
Raise a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is, seems like a lot of stress.
Super. Look at how much white hair I have now. Gary, when I met you,
yeah,
I had hair like you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we all used to have hair like Gary.
Right. We all aspire to have hair like you.
Well, now it looks like you've been president of the United States for a couple of years. It's aged you
right,
quickly.
I've definitely aged a lot in the past 3 years.
Well, it's such a difference going from the Buddhist temple to what you're doing now.
Well, right. I mean, it's not like I went straight from the Buddhist temple to owning a business.
That would be a tough transition.
Yeah, no, that would be super culture shock.
Do you hire Asians or Thai people to keep it seemingly authentic?
Is that something you thought about? It's about half and half.
Okay.
It's half Thai, half Latino.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if someone, let's say, like myself walks in and I ask for a fork...
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys make fun of me in the back?
A fork?
Yeah.
No, we'll give you a fork.
Okay. Because sometimes I feel like I'm not that gifted with chopsticks. I try. No, I always feel when I ask for a fork, especially with rice, that they're like in the back. Like,
no, and actually, you know, we would not make fun of you. In fact, we prefer if you just take it and leave. Like that's...
The food.
The food, right.
The white people, you want us to just take our food and leave.
All people, actually. Because, okay. I the place is pretty small. It's kind of more of a takeout place. We do have seats and two tables
mm-hmm.
and counter space. But, you know, I kind of modeled it like the truck. You know, people come up, order the food.
It's a walk-in truck.
Eat it somewhere else. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of like, I mean, not that I would chase you out. You're welcome to sit down and eat it there. But that's what I kind of prefer.
Oh, okay.
You just order or we deliver it to you.
Okay.
You know?
You're good with chopsticks, right?
Sure.
Is the fork just a better tool than chopsticks, though?
Yes, no.
Or am I just not good at chopsticks?
I think you're just not good at chopsticks.
What can a set of chopsticks do that a fork can't?
Mm.
It can, a set of chopsticks do that a fork can't. I think it...
Sounds like the beginning of a pun or a joke.
Yeah. Is it haiku?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if there's an answer.
Yeah. I mean, I get it.
It doesn't look as cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried with chopsticks and sometimes I get it good, but sometimes I feel like it's giving me carpal tunnel syndrome. Really?
I don't know, because I've been using it since I was a kid, so
yeah,
it doesn't really make a difference to me. And actually, I only use chopsticks if it's like a noodle soup.
Mm.
If it's just like noodles, I'll use a fork.
Because mm-hmm. you're Americanized.
Yeah, exactly. I'm Americanized now.
Yeah. So do you miss playing music? That's how we met, playing music.
Siwat's
an excellent songwriter.
I've seen you
perform back in the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember you guys sharing a show.
We've shared
many shows.
Yeah. Yeah, many shows. I do miss playing with friends. I don't miss like booking gigs and like trying to get everyone's schedules together.
Yeah.
For practice and getting to a show and lugging stuff. But yeah. I miss practicing with friends and playing shows with friends. I don't really play guitar as often anymore, but I do play ukulele every day.
You go across the street?
Well, no, I already had a ukulele before the shop opened.
Yeah.
But my son loves hearing me play ukulele. And
do you sing to him as well?
I do, and now he's starting to sing back.
Oh, wow,
yeah,
cool.
And he loves playing the ukulele as well.
Can he sing on key?
No, he's totally off key.
Would you slap him and tell him, get the hell on key?
Right, I'm like James Brown, I find him.
Yeah. Or like Joe Jackson, you just raise him like Ray the Jacksons. Charles,
you're flat, that's $50.
Hey, if you want your kids talented, mess them up real good, right?
Right.
Can certain children just naturally sing on key, or is it something you have to learn? Yeah.
No.
They can just mimic sounds and...
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Some kids, they're just born with it.
Okay.
A gift to sing right on key.
Right.
Without even knowing what the hell they're doing and how impressive that is.
My kid is definitely off key. But he's only 1.5, so.
Yeah, he just learned to use his vocal cords.
Yeah, exactly. He just started to learn words.
Right.
So if he's still off key by 3, I'm going to start finding him.
Well, at least he could talk. I mean.
At least he can talk. He loves picking up the ukulele and playing. He really does.
Well, it's good that you're still playing music, because I feel like a lot of people, when they quit, not only music, but any art form, they forget the reason that they started it.
Right.
And that's to blow off some steam.
Right. Well, I miss sitting down and getting really into a song that you just wrote out of thin air, you know?
Yeah.
I miss that part of it as well. I mean,
But there's struggle to it, too, to finish the song.
That's true. That's true.
I bet you don't miss that.
I don't miss that. But I've also realized that the best songs that anyone writes, I guess, just comes quick.
Right.
You know, and if you have to really think about it, or it takes too long to complete, then maybe there's a reason for it. I don't know. But
did that ever happen? Did you ever have a whole song come to you from beginning to end?
I think once in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't even know if I've had a complete one come.
Right. You mean lyrics and everything? No.
Yeah, no, definitely not lyrics and everything. No. But even like all the changes and everything.
Only once that happened.
And was it one of your better songs?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is like that a lot of times, the ones that just come quickest.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been writing on the ukulele. I want to do a dad album.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Are you down?
A dad album?
Yeah, it's not going to be like kid songs so much as it's
going to be... Song for dads?
Yeah. I know you're stressed out. You right. want to beat your kid?
I want to have a ukulele album, but like full band, but ukulele, no guitars. And it'll be about being a dad. I have about 5 songs written.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't have full lyrics. But I have about 5 songs.
Is it all dads on ukes?
No, but I want it to be full band. I mean, we could use maybe a uke bass. Have you seen the uke basses?
No, that exists.
Dude, you guys got to come check out this uke shop. They have uke banjos. So, like, I don't know how to play banjo, but I know how to play ukulele. So when I play the uke banjo, it sounds like I'm playing a banjo. Well,
A uke bass, is the tuning different? What makes it? Is it just a small with like heavy strings?
Or? It's heavy strings.
Okay.
My friend, and they're usually fretless.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys got to check out this.
Well, this is like a whole afternoon now. This is like getting good Thai food.
Yeah.
And going to play ukes across the street.
Yeah, dude.
You should go into business with the ukulele. it's not just a meal, it's an experience.
Right. I mean, it's an awesome store. You should check it out.
That's cool.
And it's directly across the street from my restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are still playing music. You're still...
I'm still playing ukulele.
Yeah. Do you find that gets some of your stress out? Just singing and playing?
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I sometimes like, and I'll get lost in it, and my wife will be like, hey, like, let's, you know, get going.
Uh-huh.
That's how I am, kind of.
Yeah. You get really focused on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if I'm like writing a part, I'm like, whoa, this is cool. It sounds really awesome on the uke.
Yeah. So what are you thinking of doing? The catering is doing well. And yeah. It's how much time is left in winter? Not that much. Right. We're almost, we almost
6 weeks, maybe.
Yeah, we almost made it out of winter.
Right.
And then I imagine the truck does very well when it's warm.
Yes. I mean, our season is coming up.
And then you get in the food cart.
Hopefully, yeah, in the summer, end of summer,
mm-hmm.
that can start.
Do you guys participate in like the food truck rallies that happen?
I used to, and then they started just wanting too much money to be a part of it. So now we'll only do like, you know, events or private events during the summer. Like we're gonna be doing EDC, which is the electric music dance thing.
Uh-huh. Cool.
We were just accepted to that yesterday.
Oh, right, because you could take the trucks to concerts and events
right,
and all kinds
so,
of stuff.
Right, we've been invited to go there in their mm-hmm. VIP tent, whatever that means, and we'll be selling there
nice.
On May 14th and 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And we do Afropunk every year, which is another festival in August.
Is that more fun to just do something different there?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
doing those kinds of events, just seeing the people and you know, Afropunk. We've been there 3 years in a row now, and yeah, it's always really cool. I think Afropunk is one of the cooler festivals in the city
mm-hmm.
in the summer.
Yeah, there's a lot of festivals. Northside Festival, maybe you can get in on that.
Right, too. Actually, we just got an email about that. So we'll probably be there.
Mm-hmm. Do they charge you for access to it?
Some, yeah. Most of these events do charge, yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking to monetize where they can, right?
Right. And you'd think, oh, you know, people don't, and that's another thing people don't think about. Like, oh, I'll just go to Smorgasburg and mm-hmm. sell my food there. Well, you know, they charge a pretty hefty amount just to mm-hmm. be there.
Yeah.
So that, you know, will you cover that amount, you know, right. selling your food?
You're taking the gamble.
Right, and you still have
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I think in general, the average person doesn't respect the amount of work it is to run a business, right. whatever kind of business
it is. Or the cost.
Is.
And yeah, you know, no. Right, exactly. I don't mean to interrupt, but, okay. you know, we live in a time now where, you know, a bad Yelp review can ruin you, you know, or a
yes.
bad tweet or anything can, like, knock yeah. down something you've worked so hard for. And people just see it as a blip, as like, oh, this place sucks because, you know, it got that bad review from this guy or
right.
someone.
Yeah.
Someone complained about it.
And the tough thing with that is that people don't Yelp, for example, when everything's fine. It's either, it's the extremes. It's
right.
the best night of their life when, you know, they proposed to their wife and had some great noodles.
Right.
Or, you know, they just didn't get what they wanted. But,
right.
But the large percentage of people that go into any business are just satisfied but not moved enough to remark about it.
Right. And yeah, that's what I mean. Like, no comment is something I'd love. You know, mm-hmm. if you have nothing bad to say or good to say, then we've done our job. You know, like, I don't know why it's become like every meal has to be this mind-blowing experience.
Right.
You know, now foodies who have an opinion about food,
yeah.
you know, every meal needs to be photographed and mind-blowing and like, oh, this tastes so good. Just have a look at it on my
right.
on my Instagram. You know, like, I didn't open a restaurant to blow people's minds. You know, I wanted to just
fill their tummies.
Yeah, fill their tummies with good food that yeah. I grew up eating. And that's it. You know, I'm not trying to you know.
It is something to keep in mind with. It is something to keep in mind with Yelp reviews. Like, anger motivates people more than satisfaction.
That's for sure. And you know, it's funny, like, when you see people, and we've generally had good reviews on Yelp, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But then I'll see people who, like, have, like, 350 reviews on Yelp.
Yeah.
You know, and even if they give me a good review, I'll see that because we get emails from Yelp for each review.
Every time you get a review,
yeah,
right?
Like, oh, you've been reviewed,
right?
So sometimes I'll see, check it if I have time. Sometimes
can you respond to reviews?
You can, but then that's a slippery slope.
Opening a can of worms,
exactly.
Right?
And I don't. Then that's why I choose to not. I'm like, no, I'm not yeah. going to do that. I see other Yelp people doing that, or other businesses doing that. And it's just like then I would spend all day like writing these people,
right?
But, you know, even someone with, like, multiple reviews that give us a good review, I'm like, aren't you doing anything else? Like, if you have over 350 Yelp reviews,
yeah.
that's a lot of time to be sitting down just
yeah.
writing about other people's businesses.
They think they're actually, like, critics.
Right. They yeah. think that, you know, they think that they were getting paid.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now more than ever in our history, people have a voice.
Yes.
And which some people shouldn't have a voice.
Right.
That's a problem.
To the detriment of society.
Seriously.
Everyone has a voice.
I think a lot of people should just shut up.
Right. Well, which is why I think that like Yelp or any of these review sites, or when you comment on anything, it should have your name and your phone number.
That's why a lot of people now link comment sections to Facebook,
because
you're getting so many just random stupid comments, and at least people are somewhat responsible.
Right.
Because it links right to your Facebook.
So. It should have your picture, your name, and maybe your phone number.
Yeah. And your friends and your employers are all right there.
Your place of work. That way you can go into some guy and judge him on what he's doing all day.
Right.
You hunt down your Yelper, your Yelp reviewer.
It's just amazing, though, that people spend so much time, like, reviewing.
Yeah.
When they're not getting paid to do so.
Oh, totally. For Mic Swap, for my app, we had this review. This guy gave it like 1 star, and I got so caught up in it, man. Like,
did you?
I found him. Yeah.
Oh, no.
And his review wasn't even something that was true. He like trashed it and wrote this nasty thing, and it wasn't even true. It was like, no, dude, it's not what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I went and I found him and I responded to him like privately, and then he made that public.
He made that public?
Yes.
Of course he did, because he's a troll.
Yeah, he's a troll. And I was like, oh, I get it. Don't feed the trolls.
Mm-hmm. Don't feed the troll. Literally, you know, we opened our restaurant, and a week later, we got our first Yelp review, a 1-star review by this one girl who had 4 other reviews. And she said we were too expensive. Our lunch special at $8.50 was too expensive.
Oh, come on.
That she could get $6.50 in Manhattan. And she gave us a 1-star review, and it's like, you know, our very first review,
right?
You know, so that leaves a mark, you know. Yeah. What I mean, like, if the first thing you see is a 1-star review for a restaurant that just opened, that, you know, that could have really hurt us, and who knows if that did or not, you know.
Well, a lot of companies buy Yelp reviews now. I mean, you probably know this, but you can just buy a bunch of 5-star reviews from people.
Right You can just
people like that guy that had 300 reviews. He's like pretty legitimate. He could probably sell some reviews to people.
Right. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Which is totally shady, and which why, I mean, Yelp is just ridiculous.
That's the thing with the internet, is that you can buy anything. You could buy YouTube plays. You could buy all kinds of Twitter followers.
Right.
Anything could be purchased.
Yes.
For $5 on Fiverr.com. Do you know about Fiverr.com?
No.
It's crazy. $5. You can get anything you want.
Really?
Yeah. You could probably buy Yelp reviews on Fiverr, but I don't know if I'd do that for your business.
No. I hate Yelp. I don't want to deal with them. They call me literally every day. Yelp.
Trying to sell you ad space or whatever.
Trying to sell me ad space at $350 a month, 6 months at a time.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm trying to run a business. You think I have that money to just give to Yelp?
Are other restaurants, you think, trying to sabotage you? Or does everyone welcome the competition?
That's kind of like an unspoken thing. If they are trying to sabotage you, they'll never openly admit it.
Uh-huh. Do you feel a competitiveness, or is it like,
Not so much. I mean, and certainly with the food trucks, there's kind of like a camaraderie amongst most trucks, unless you get off on the wrong foot and try to steal someone's parking spot.
Uh-huh, right.
Is
it like a respect thing? Like, oh, that person's been here for years in that spot.
It used to be more of that. And when I first came into the scene on the truck, I would be very aware of like whose corners were,
right,
whose territory I was in.
Well, it's like that for busking in the subway. There's certain that's their spot.
They've
been there for years and no one touches it.
Right. And then, but now it seems like the newbies now, they don't care. Or they don't. The new generation. They don't care. They just want to get a spot. Whoever gets there first.
Right.
Every man for himself.
How do you teach like old school principles to new school kids that don't care?
You just be a real dick, I guess.
Yeah.
And try to show up even earlier the next week, or the next day.
Yeah, because it's not a written law. They'd be like, whatever, that's your old school principles. We don't have to follow that.
Well, that's another thing. Like, we have a spot we don't even tweet about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spot that I found before I had a truck. I was like, if I have a truck, I'm going to park it here.
Uh-huh.
And we've been going there for 2.5 years. And I don't even tweet about it because I don't want other trucks showing up. Now, 2 years in, trucks are starting to know about that area.
Yeah.
And we only go there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's on 99th and Madison
in
the city. And we go there Tuesdays and Thursdays, but we don't tweet about it. It's the only spot we don't tweet about because of the other trucks. Now, other trucks now have caught on to this, or people who have friends that have trucks or whatever work there. Or,
right.
It's right near Mount Sinai Hospital.
So there's enough foot traffic.
Right. There's enough foot traffic there. And we had it really good there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody bothered us.
Yeah.
We could show up as late as we want.
Nice.
You know, and still do business. Now, or recently, other trucks are starting to show up on days that we're there, Tuesdays and Thursdays. But, you know, it's not so much the competition I'm worried about. I want our spot. You know, you could park down the street. You could park on the corner.
Yeah.
Just don't take our spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
I always wonder,
you know, we'll still crush you because we've been there for 2 years. We have our regulars and, you know, that you're not, we're not worried about your food taking away from us.
Right.
You know, I just want to be able to have my spot to park. To sell.
Do the restaurants ever give the truck shit? Like, if I see a
constantly,
right? A lot of times I'll see a taco truck in front of a Mexican place.
Right.
And I feel bad for the restaurant because they got to pay rent and everything. And here's
right. I mean, and that's funny because now I have a restaurant.
Yeah.
And you know, if another Thai truck parked in front of my restaurant, sure, I would have a problem with that.
What do you do?
What do you do?
You can't do anything legally, right?
Legally, no. I mean, you could call the cops. You could say the sidewalk's not 12 feet wide. It has to be 12 feet wide.
Uh-huh.
So they have to get out of here. This is not a parking spot.
Nice.
For a truck. Yeah. This is a, you know, it has to be 12 feet wide, 20 feet from the entrance of a subway. There's all these ridiculous
rules. All these rules that you know about now.
Right. And or you could call the health department on them or something, you know.
Right. So you don't have to come out with a bat and just start bashing things.
I mean, I could come out with a bat and look like a crazy person, you know.
Your truck ain't so pretty no more.
Right.
I think the Buddhist monk you study with.
I could come out and look like a lunatic.
Yeah. You know?
And that might work, but then I would get a reputation.
Come out chanting like a monk with a bat. I'm going to beat you.
Right.
I've come so far.
Just don't do it. You know, like, you know, even it doesn't even have to be a Thai food truck. I mean, like, if I parked my truck in front of a pizza shop, that pizza shop would have a problem with me, you know.
Any restaurant.
Yeah. They don't like trucks. Restaurants hate trucks.
Have you dealt with that?
Not at my restaurant yet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of funny because I came from the mobile vending world.
Right.
So, you know, would I be pissed at a truck if they parked across the street? In a way, yes. If you're there while I'm open, then yes.
Right.
Come when I'm not open, you know.
Mm-hmm. I bet you swap food with other trucks.
All the time, yeah.
All the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that must be nice.
Yeah, you get free food.
Yeah.
I guess.
You don't have to eat the food you're preparing all day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, well, we've covered a lot.
Have we? Yeah.
Yeah, I think we started from now and went all the way back to your music days and your days in Thailand.
Well, I guess we have. We didn't talk about what I did. I mean, what I did between then, when it's worked in a hospital.
Right.
In an operating room. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
I did that
right.
for 11 years before I opened a food truck.
I remember that.
I used to be a surgical tech, and I would pass instruments to the surgeons during surgery.
You've seen some really gnarly surgeries.
Yes. In 11 years, I definitely saw some gnarly stuff.
I could see why you'd want to change businesses, change careers.
Well, that wasn't why, but yeah, I'm still not sure what made me decide to go out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, living, you know, and I say it to my manager and I joke about it with my wife, you know, I went from a, you know, 9-to-5 job, steady paycheck.
Making decent money, right?
Making pretty good money.
Yeah.
You know, $30 an hour to, you know, working 24/7 with who knows how much money I take home at the end of the week.
Right.
You know?
Well, they say that, you know, for some reason, a lot of people think that when you have a job, it's more steady than working for yourself. But it's not really that way, because when you're working for yourself, you're your own. You're in control of your destiny, where your job can be like, oh, his budget cuts back. So
right.
We got to let you go.
Right, right.
So you're in control of your own destiny.
I hope to think that I am.
As much as the customers keep coming.
Right, sure.
But you're in more control than just having a boss that could fire you for whatever reason.
Yes, Yeah, I guess so.
Well, you are still married, so.
I'm still married.
So that can happen.
Right. I don't have to listen to anyone else. No one else is bossing me around, so that's good.
Mm-hmm. And from watching all those surgeries, I bet you cut those cut those animals pretty precisely.
Pretty precise, sure, yeah. I don't get grossed out very easily.
Wait, is that at odds with Buddhism?
What's that?
Eating meat?
Certain interpretations, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not where I was practicing, not where I studied, or not at the monastery that I was at.
It's okay to eat meat?
It's okay. If that's what you were given in your alms bowl,
right,
then that's what you would eat because you need eat to live.
Right.
As long as you're not actively killing the animal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you were given, or that's what you were.
So you just appreciate
fed.
Whatever you're
right.
Right, I see.
You're just grateful that someone came, and that reciprocates good karma to them. That
right.
They kept, you know, a monk alive, or
mm-hmm.
So you'd be asking for alms, but like whispering under your breath, meat, meat.
Right. Actually, you don't ask. That's another thing.
Oh, okay.
Monks never ask, and you walk silently, and you only stop in front of houses that you know people are waiting for you.
Uh-huh.
And then when they give you food, then you do a chant for them, and then you continue. So there's no speaking, actually. When we would walk in groups of three.
The chant is like, medium rare, medium rare, medium rare.
Right, right. pork chicken. Yeah,
no, like side of potatoes.
Like, yeah, the monks weren't talking to each other, like, don't go to that house. They make terrible roast chicken.
Yeah, you fight over your alms route.
Right, no, none of that was going on.
That's so
you're walking barefoot in the streets, like, silent.
Right, but I mean that must be one of the few real pleasures is eating food.
In a way, but it's not when you're there, you're not supposed to take pleasure in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're there, you eat, you don't eat till you're stuffed. You eat till you've had your fill and that you can be okay for the rest of the day.
What if there's more food than you can eat?
Then usually that would just go to the people who are around the temple who are keeping it clean and you know, like the people who would assist the temple.
Right.
So that food would go to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, it's so fascinating.
It's a totally different life. Yeah.
Totally different life. But in a way, it's so liberating because you're not dealing with all this human stuff.
In a way, but you are still, because you're still a human.
Mm-hmm.
You're still, you know, have human thoughts and distractions, and it's just trying to control those distractions or at least control your focus.
Right. Well, our focus right now is like paying that bill, getting this done, accomplishing this.
Right. Yeah. And
what's next? What's next?
Right. What's next? And how am I going to come up with the money to pay this? Or mm-hmm. and as a business owner, it's like, okay, you're worried about the quality of your product. You're worried about, you know, are your employees happy?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you making enough money to pay the bills? You know, or is someone stealing from you?
A lot of restaurants are cash businesses.
Right.
So yeah, they put in those micro systems,
uh-huh.
right? Micros or POS systems.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And I recently installed one on the truck.
Uh-huh.
And we, of course, we use that at the restaurant as well.
Right.
Well, so, you know, we got broken into about 2 months ago.
What, did the truck or the restaurant?
The restaurant.
Someone broke into the restaurant?
Someone broke into the restaurant.
That's a hungry burglar. Why would you break into a restaurant?
I mean, they were looking for a safe or something. Apparently, I had security cameras that were running.
Uh-huh.
And caught, it was like three guys. And apparently, the police officer who saw the video was like, they've been looking for these three guys for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is, because since we're on the corner, these guys were hitting the side entrances of businesses and looking for a safe or a cash box or something.
Uh-huh.
We don't keep anything like that in our restaurant.
Right.
Luckily, because I live down the street, I just take all the cash to my house.
Right.
Or anything that's left, you know.
Yeah,
that's dangerous too, though. You know,
that's dangerous as well.
Kind of see what's going on there.
Scratch that. I'm moving.
Got to do that bank drop.
Yeah. Right. Well, usually I'll go to the bank in the morning or whatever.
Right.
It's always scary.
There's
nothing. We're not that successful of a restaurant yet.
Right.
So it's not like a whole lot of money we're talking about here.
Right.
At $8.50 for a lunch special, you're not successful.
Right.
Did they catch the burglars?
No, I don't think so. He probably would have called me if they did.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, I've installed even more cameras
mm-hmm.
because now seeing those cameras actually catch something, I wanted to see more about the restaurant. So now I have cameras like all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
And I can look at it on my phone. Before I couldn't.
Right.
In the bathrooms?
In the toilets, yeah.
So you can watch employees too.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's been good as well, because now I can kind of like keep track of who's doing what.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much to like catch someone doing something wrong, but just to make sure everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right. You know? Make sure like when you leave, they're not like, oh, cool, see what's gone. Let me sit around.
Right, right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Well, I wish you much luck.
Thanks.
And hopefully people will hear this and come out.
Yeah. 3602 36th Avenue.
In Astoria.
Come by. We're down the street from Studio Square Beer Garden. Have you ever been there?
I've heard of it.
It's a monstrosity, but they have a lot of beer and a lot of, you know, it's huge.
Different than the Bohemian Beer Garden?
That is different than Bohemian. So
that's a newer one.
Okay. It's more like sports oriented. Okay. They have huge screen sports stuff going on, a lot of beer.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
It is horrible. In the summer, it's terrible because they'll have like events and there's like no parking
in
my neighborhood. But above it, WeWork, which is this company that they're building 3 floors of WeWork above Studio Square.
It's
going to be open this summer, and it's going to completely change the neighborhood.
Oh, that's going to really be good for your restaurant.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
It would completely change the neighborhood if that happened. They're building 750 office spaces.
Well, I think sounds like you're in a good location for the long run.
Right, I just have to get there.
Yeah.
Like if I don't, you know, go out of business before the WeWork opens, then hopefully it'll be good for us.
Right.
You know, that whole neighborhood, and I think New York City in general, but, you know, I don't want to keep going too long, but in that neighborhood, Long Island City, Astoria, around us, I counted at least 15 buildings being built.
Yes.
Just within like a 2-mile radius.
Yeah, no. New York City and the surrounding areas doing very well. I mean,
crazy. Just don't know where people are getting the money to move into these places or buy these places, you know? Because it's like nobody I really know.
I think property's just pretty much always been going up here.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
No matter what the economy looks like, it just still goes up.
Yeah. But where are these people coming from?
Europe. Maybe VC investors. Venture capitalists
Arabic
just buying
money,
all.
Oil money.
Could be. Just huge corporations buying stuff.
Yeah. Really crazy.
Having someone manage it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
We'll see. Well, thanks for coming to do this, Siwa.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.